Okay, great. We're going to go ahead and get started, and I'm sorry for the delay. I just wanted to give people enough time to log in. Thank you so much for being with us today. We're excited to continue the webinar series on Child Status Net, and today's discussion, as you know, is on the STEPS OVC baseline findings, specifically on the orphans and vulnerable children component. So just to quickly go over the agenda, immediately after this, my colleague Gretchen Batar from our knowledge management team is going to give just a couple slides of overview on the webinar technical tips. So if there are any problems with your connection, just any technical difficulties, she'll give us a little advice about how to navigate those. And then we will actually jump directly to our presentation by Matthew. And as I'm so sorry, Monitoring and Evaluation Technical Officer in Zambia. He is responsible for data collection, management, analysis, and reporting on the STEPS OVC program. And Matthew is joining us today from Zambia, and we're excited to have him with us as a presenter. And I did want to make one note about that. As Matthew is joining us from Zambia, we've tested and retested his connection, but if we have any technical difficulties on his side, we will let you know, and we appreciate your patience in advance. And Gretchen?
Okay. I'm just going to spend a minute talking about how to use Adobe Connect and what to do if you have any problems with connection or audio. If for some reason your internet connection is lost and you're booted from the room, you can easily rejoin the meeting by clicking on the webinar link you used to access it originally. You can find that online in the webinar section of the Measure Evaluation website or in the email that you were sent, probably by Liz. If during the webinar you have any problems hearing the audio or a choppy connection, then what you should do is disconnect from the webinar. Just close the window and rejoin again using the link that you were provided with. And sometimes that helps, but if nothing else works, then please know that you can access the webinar recording online. And Liz will have that link as well. And if you do have difficulties, I would appreciate it if you could send me an email. You'll see my address on the screen, glbitar@unc.edu. And we would like to know if you have any technical problems, just so we can be better prepared for those in the future. Okay, so an important aspect of Adobe Connect webinars is being able to participate. And one of the ways that you as participants can join in on the discussion is verbally using your microphones. So at the top of your screen, the top menu bar, you'll see an icon that looks like a person raising their hand. There's a picture of it on the slide. If you click on this icon, it's your way of asking for microphone access. After you click on that icon, you'll hear someone say, "Oh, you have asked for permission to speak, it's your turn." And at that point, you should go up and click on the button that looks like a microphone. And that will enable your microphone. You'll see another picture of what that button looks like on the slide. There's also the option, once we get to the discussion section of this webinar, to type in your questions. So if you're more comfortable doing that, you will certainly have that option. Beside the raise your hand button, you'll notice a small drop-down arrow. If you click on that arrow, you'll see a variety of emoticons. And this is your way of expressing yourself both during the presentation and the discussion. During the presentation, there is not a chat option. So if you have a question, you can raise your hand. If you like what the presenter is saying, you can agree or applaud it. And if you're having trouble hearing, you can ask that he speak louder. So we'll be paying attention to see if any of these icons appear next to your name, because when you select one, it will show up next to your name. So feel free to use these options to express yourself. And once again, the webinar recording will be available online, and you can see a link to one of the places it will be available. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Matthew.
Greetings to everyone. I think enough introductions. My name is Matthew Gunga. I work for a World Vision led program in Zambia called STEPS OVC. What I'm going to share with you today essentially is the findings of our baseline study that we did early last year as part of establishing the baseline values for our key indicators. So I'll basically go through this the hope that you'll be able to learn a few things. My presentation essentially will follow three broad categories. I will do an introduction highlighting the research questions and methods that we use, as well as some of the study limitations that we faced in our attempt to conduct this study. This study was a part of a broader, or the findings that I'm presenting here were part of a broader survey, but for this discussion I'll focus essentially on the findings of the OVC component, and then obviously discuss some of our conclusions and give a few recommendations. We set out to establish, more specifically in the area of their knowledge when it comes to HIV/AIDS, attitudes and practices. We also sought to establish levels of well-being at that particular time, as well as how they uptake and access different services, including HIV prevention, care and support. The study design was a quasi-experimental, which the baseline forms the pre. We do hope to have a post-test early 2013. We designed this study with a cohort, meaning that we hope to track the same individuals that we interviewed at the baseline at the end line. We use a multi-stage cluster sampling, meaning that we randomly selected districts from those districts we randomly selected swaths, then where we randomly selected individuals. For the OVC component, we specifically targeted the OVCs aged 11 to 17, largely because of ethical reasons. We realized that earlier on in the study design that we may have challenges interviewing people or children who are below the age of 18. The study, the number of individuals interviewed was 1,869, and the rest are the different components, but we not focus on those today. For the data collection tools we use, we adopted and adapted different versions of already validated questions, including the quality of life questionnaire that was developed by the CDC. For the nutritional elements, we looked at the FANTA questionnaires, and for the emotional psychosocial elements, we looked at the strengths and difficulties questionnaire. We conducted this survey in 9 districts of Zambia, listed there, with a strong support of the University of Zambia and the Institute of Economic and Social Research, which is referred to there as INESO. Data was entered in CSPRO, moved to SPSS for analysis. We got ethical approval both from Zambia and in the US, as well as got written authorization by the Ministry of Health in Zambia to perform. The sampling frames we had attempted to use were from a previous program, RAPIDS, which was implemented on another consortium, again led by World Vision, that was ended 2 years prior to the baseline. So a lot of attrition had happened, people had moved. So we ended up with about 31% replacement rates. We also had some delays in the process of ethics approval. And the study did take some time, essentially ending sometime early from 2011. We had also planned to do some cross-data analysis where we had caregivers linked to certain OVC, but this caregivers that were sampled were not necessarily those that were found for the OVC that we wanted to interview. So that again was an area of challenge. We also had some sensitive questions where when interviewing HIV-positive individuals whom we already knew, they implied the HIV positivity came into question. We also had some question of sexual activity to OVC. And also the questionnaire was relatively long. It took about an hour to administer. Overall, we had more or less a similar representation in terms of sex. We had 52% of the sample being female, with a mean age of 13.8. With the dose, among one of our top findings was that, interestingly, that 95, virtually all our OVC were currently in school, and there were no sexual, differences in sex were not statistically significant. However, we did note that younger children were more likely to be in school, and as they grew older, they appeared to be dropping off. We also noted that children living with biological parents were more likely to report being current school attendants than those living with siblings or grandparents. Under the area of social capital and protection, we note that about two-thirds of the OVCs were living under the care of a biological father or mother. They do report spending a lot of their free time with the age mix, but we do see boys being more likely to report this. And when they have problems, we see almost half of the children go to their mothers for help. In terms of possession of basic items, we see that 88.5% reported having two sets of clothes. And interestingly, we see that girls are more likely to have two sets of clothes. I guess this is typical in village settings where we see boys running around either with shirts or no shorts, so I guess it's worth reporting that. We do see two-thirds of them report having babies, and about half of them report having at least one pair of shoes, with older children more likely to report having more shoes. On food security, we did find that at least one in every three OVC went a whole day and night without eating because there was no food. This was relatively disconcerting. We also see that more than half went to sleep hungry because there was not enough food in the last 4 weeks. We do see that children are also eating smaller meals. In terms of 67.5% felt that they ate a smaller meal than they needed. In terms of the frequency, we see that there the numbers go up slightly, with 22% reporting eating fewer meals because there was no enough food. Overall, there was no differences between boys and girls or age groups across all these findings. For psychosocial well-being, based on the strengths and difficulties questionnaire, we do know that we note that nearly one in every five children showed abnormal emotional well-being. I think talking to issues of somatic complaints, feelings of discontentment, nervousness, and some level of insecurities, and about 19% had borderline scores. Work for money, we note that more than half of the OVCs reported having worked for money, with boys more likely to report having worked for money. Again, we see older children being more likely to report having worked. Interestingly, we asked, have you been hit or beaten in the last 4 weeks, and we see that 74.6% reported this has having happened to them. We also see in the last 6 months about half of them report being beaten. In terms of sexual abuse, we had a small 3.5% reporting as a having forced sex. But what was interesting was the fact that 1.7 of the boys actually reporting forcing someone to have sex. Now, in terms of health indicators, we see that most of the children, about 80%, report their health as good. However, we do see some episodes of illnesses, with about 53% reporting illnesses in the last 4 weeks. Girls are more likely to report illnesses than boys. We see that malaria is still a problem, as well as typical common colds, as well as diarrhea. However, there is a significant percentage of them, 80%, reports that they did indeed receive treatment for their last illness. We noted that about one in every five OVC, 20%, had had an HIV test, with older, slightly older children, 16 to 17, being twice as likely to have had an HIV test as compared to younger children. We asked about the possession of a mosquito net, and we see about half of them reporting that their household did had a net. About 80% reporting that somebody in that household indeed did sleep under the net last night. When we probed further, we saw that OVCs, about 60% of them indicated that they indeed slept under the net. For terms of knowledge, in terms of how do you prevent malaria, we see that most 64 indicate knowledge in terms of bed nets, which is common to a similar study found almost the same finding in Zambia. For individuals with families with HIV positive individuals are treated unkindly by other students. We see that also that HIV infected individuals or pupils are treated unkindly by teachers. In terms of those OVCs that are known to receive services either from NGOs or other faith-based organizations, we see that there is also some sense of unkind treatment by the community being reported. For knowledge and AIDS, knowledge, attitudes and practices related to HIV, sorry, the slide here is a bit, the text is low, small, but we note that most of them have had of HIV/AIDS, with older children being more likely to have had of HIV than younger children. 97% of them correctly identify that HIV can be transmitted through shared needles. We see that 67% of them agree that mosquitoes cannot transmit HIV, with the older children report most likely to report this. We see that 86% agree that HIV cannot be transmitted by sharing a meal with somebody who is living with HIV/AIDS. We also see that 77% agree that HIV cannot be transmitted through witchcraft, and we see that 85% indicate that HIV cannot be cured by herbs. Interestingly, we also see a similar proportion indicating that a healthy-looking person can also have HIV. And I think overall we do see that knowledge in terms of HIV is more consistent among older than younger OVC. In terms of correct knowledge on prevention, we see that most of them understand the values of abstinence and condom use. We also see that they feel that if indeed a pupil has HIV and is not sick, they should be allowed to continue. If a teacher is not HIV positive, they should also be allowed to continue teaching. And we see that the older the children, the more likely they are to hold these accepting attitudes towards HIV positive than younger children. In terms of sexual debut, we do note that 20%, one in every five of report ever having sex, with boys twice as likely to report ever having sex. We see that for OVCs, the sexual debut range is about 5 to 17 years old, with the mean age being 12.8 for boys and 14 for girls. Most report that the first time they had sex was because of love. But as reported earlier, we see that 3.5 say they were forced to have sex, and 5.2 did it for monetary gain. About a third spoke to their partner before having sex about HIV. No differences in sex, no statistical differences in sex and age group. We note that in terms of protective devices, 87 have heard of condoms. 50%, so half of them, indicate they are confident that they could obtain a condom if they wanted. Boys being more likely to report this than girls. Older children, again, being more likely to report being more confident. 40% report ever using a condom. The number goes slightly down. 26 used a condom the first time they had sex. Interestingly, girls were twice more likely to report this than boys. 35% used a condom at last sex, with older children being more likely to report condom use. We did see that 11.8% of the girls reported ever being pregnant. These findings, I think we talked to that maybe this is an area that needs further inquiry, because virtually all the OVC indicated that they had not consumed alcohol or never tried drugs. I think this is an area we need to explore further. In terms of circumcision, we see a third or almost a third of the boys report being circumcised, but interestingly, 40% of them want to be circumcised. And those that want to be circumcised indicate that HIV prevention is a reason, as well as hygiene. Based on those findings, we do make some recommendations. I think the one in every three OVC that slept a whole day, stayed a whole day and night without having to eat, talks to the need to prioritize food security, as well as exploring economic strengthening to ensure that households, either from their own production or from purchases, have enough to meet their dietary needs. We also see that that in as much as school children are in school, as they grow older, there appears to be a drop or a diminishing effect in terms of the older they become, the more likely they are to drop. So we are recommending that there may be a need to support intervention that's explicitly aimed to reduce dropping out of schools. We do see that in terms of emotional outcomes, that the OVCs tend to exhibit some emotional, unfavorable emotional symptoms, as well as we do note that there are incidences of abuse, and therefore these two elements we feel needs to be integral in OVC programming. We also see that there are elements, OVCs are still having sex, the OVC age for sex is relatively low. Therefore, we have seen successful programs in terms of peer-to-peer education that have shown effects in terms of delaying this sexual debut. In terms of knowledge gaps, we do see that in as much as the majority, about 77%, indicate that HIV cannot be transmitted through mosquitoes, or witchcraft. We do see there is about 20 or 30% of them that still believe that these are ways in which HIV can be transmitted. So we are proposing that whatever HIV prevention messaging in the program is to focus on needs to highlight these misconceptions, myths, as well as ways in which we can reduce stigma that HIV-positive children, if they are not affected, should be allowed to continue with their normal activities. Finally, we cannot stop without acknowledging USAID Zambia for making this study possible. Specifically, single out our former AOTR, Dr. Kasese Mbota, also for their support in data collection and analysis, Futures Group. We do have Jennifer Chapman and Mary who have worked with us, and the people who helped us in terms of the data collection, as well as the respondents. Steps OVC staff, we had a series of workshops that have been helped generate and mold some of these recommendations and what actions the program needs to take. And of course, you, for your attention, I think that's essentially it. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Matthew, for such an interesting presentation. And now we're moving into a period where we would like to take questions from anyone in the audience who has them. And Gretchen, do you have any instructions for us on this?
You should be able to type your questions in at the box that says Q&A. At the bottom of that box, you'll see an area where you can type in your questions. Or on the left side, there's a middle box that says raising hand to speak. If you would like to verbally ask questions, just follow those instructions.
Okay, great. Thank you. So if anyone has any questions, I think in the past we found it's easiest if people can type their questions just for connectivity, but either way is fine, of course. Okay, it looks like we have a question from Alex Collins. What were some of the constraints that caused you not to collect data from youth under 11?
Can I respond?
Yes, Matthew, please respond.
We had discussions. Our initial submission for ethical review had children, we were going to talk to children as young as six, but on recommendation in terms of the complexities and the sensitivity of the area of inquiry, they did recommend that we may want to either talk to those children in the presence of their parents or remove them entirely, and I think we went for the option of removing them for purposes of the value of having either the parent or the guardian being present when we are talking to them. But you'll also appreciate the challenges around talking to children that are below that age and that also talk to how difficult it is to ask the question and for them to understand. And I think both elements are what then made us talk to children that were above that age. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Matthew. Are there any other questions? Feel free to type them. And we'll give a few minutes just to allow people to type in questions. Okay, we have another question from Sonia. Matthew, did you explore stigma within the family?
No, I think the question was not directed at the family. It was around, do you think individuals in the community who are HIV positive are treated unkindly by the community? So it was relatively general. We didn't specifically look at whether there is any issues of stigma within the family, you know, within.
Okay, we have another question from Antonia. What was the precise definition of OVC used to identify respondents, and how were appropriate respondents identified?
This is a USAID funded program, so we subscribe to the USAID definition of an OVC. I mean, somebody below 18, living in a family that is either affected or infected with HIV. That's basic definition. But we, like I said, our sampling frame was a list of beneficiaries previously and served by the previous program, RAPIDS. So that formed our sampling frame. So individuals that were already registered as fitting that criteria were randomly selected to be interviewed in this survey. Thank you.
Okay, well, are there any final questions before we end today's webinar? I'll just give one more minute in case anyone's typing. Okay, we have a question from Sonia. How different do you expect these results to be as compared with OVC not in the STEPS program?
We have done some level of triangulation with other OVC studies, most notably the Zambia Demographic Health Survey also had a component of OVC. There was a situational analysis that was done by Boston University in 2009. As well as other smaller studies in Zambia, and what we see is some relative similarity. I think we have maybe the only finding that appears to be different is at least with one other study, the one where children are being indicated as not, that OVCs are not in school, but we do find that even the DHS reported that they didn't find any major differences between OVC and regular children, for lack of a better term. So we haven't found any major variations between our findings and those of other similar OVC.
Okay, thank you, Matthew. And Matthew also sent a message to me. We'd like to invite Shelby is with World Vision in the U.S. And if Shelby, if there's anything that you'd like to contribute, any comments that you'd like to make about this study, we have enabled your mic, but you'll have to turn it on in the top left section of your screen as well.
Me? Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Well, thanks, Matthew. Great job on presenting this information. I think you've been quite comprehensive in talking about the information that was gathered. I think just to say that a lot of the baselines were validated in practice in seeing activities be implemented over the last year and a half or so have really validated what the baseline brought forward. So that was helpful because the baseline could both inform programming but also reaffirm what we had set out to do, particularly in areas like food security, which he had talked about was a weakness, psychosocial support, as well as, the need for even sort of income generating things rather than direct support. Before we had maybe focused on school needs and giving those sort of handouts and so forth, but now we really saw from the baseline and from practice that we have to address issues of equity and providing support for households to really meet their needs And so it's been a really interesting exercise to take that and build off of it with the project and see sort of what, you know, the generation today of Zambians really, really need versus, you know, what we did before, because we did have the predecessor project. So Futures has been a great partner in this in beefing up our M&E and helping us to, you know, both do these sorts of major studies at the beginning and end of the project, but also ongoing studies and to enhance our M&E system to capture data real time and provide feedback to inform the program. So overall, I think just to say that, you know, in practice, this has been really validated. The baseline, by and large, was very, very accurate with what we've seen in practice.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Shelby. And Matthew, I don't know if you have anything to add to that. If not, we do have another question.
No, nothing.
So the next question is, what strategies do you intend to adopt in order to sustain your interventions once the donors leave?
I think the steps OVC, maybe I didn't give the full name, but one of the key letters there stands for sustainability. So a key component of this program is actually ensuring sustainability. We dedicate a full strategic objective in terms of this area of sustainability. One of the ways in which we are doing this is building the capacity of local organizations, very small organizations that are community-based, trying to build their own capacity to implement and sustain this type of interventions. We've also, like Shelby has mentioned, tried to focus a large part of our program in implementing economic strengthening activities that are self-perpetuating. We like to use in the program that are viral, meaning that everybody wants to take on these and these are coined around the traditional community savings and loan approaches. So we've initiated a lot of community-based savings groups, and these have picked up relatively well. By the end of the last fiscal year, we had close to 17,000 members of those groups with savings of close to $200,000. So we do hope that that type of initiative also helps sustain the ability of community members as well as OVCs to meet their own needs. So they don't also rely on this organization, but also have their own innate capacity to meet their own needs. So in those two ways, unless Shelby wants to add something else, but those are the ways in which we are trying to establish sustainability.
I just agree with Matthew. Yeah, well said. I think, you know, we have an entire sustainability strategy and plan that includes heavy capacity building, as well as ensuring all of our programming is linked with the government programming. So ensuring our systems, everything from our M&E system down to our, you know, caregiver training manuals and so forth is done aligned with the government. And like Matthew said, our really intensive small sub-granting program, which has, you know, we aim to have about 400 small local and faith-based CBOs by the end of the grant, up and running, and we've built their capacity beyond just the technical areas of HIV, but into areas of financial management and securing additional funding and so forth. So that's a big heart of our program, is building the capacity of local entities to take on these activities. And by and large, they are doing most of the actual on-the-ground implementation already. So their capacity has been built, and they're doing that, and now it's just a matter of supporting them to secure additional funding going forward. But that's a big part of it, is linking with the government, linking with local capacity, local organizations, and then working with a volunteer network of about 24,000 caregivers that we have nationwide that we're putting together systems in place so that they can be sustained in the long term.
Okay, well, thank you, both Matthew and Shelby, for that. And as of right now, we don't have any other questions. We have about 5 minutes left. So if you have any final questions, I'll give 1 minute, and then otherwise we will wrap things up for today. Well, thank you so much to everyone who was able to join us today, and thank you to Matthew, our presenter, and Shelby for joining us from the U.S., and Gretchen, thank you for all of your help, and we look forward to our next webinar, and we hope that you can all join us for that as well.